Ozark Mountain Daredevils, If You Want to Get to Heaven, back from 1980. It's a great song. We're talking with filmmaker Jeremy Corbell about his various projects, film projects and investigations. In this half hour, we're going to get into Patient 17, the alien implant case. He's got some updates on that, as well as Nano Man. And then we're going to get into a conversation about a big case he's working that I've also been involved with. We need your help on it. There were hundreds of witnesses, but the cone of silence has been dropped over this thing. So we'll give you the broad strokes of that. Jeremy, by the way, coming to us from the Pioneer Motel in Pioneer Town, which is where he lives, and right next to the world famous Pappy and Harriet Saloon. I think probably if you've been out at to the desert out there, you know about Pappy and Harriet's. It's an institution, and I'm sure it has people who should be institutionalized. That's just a joke. We'll be right back, and we'll get to your calls and comments and questions closer to the bottom of the hour. So if you get online, you're going to be there for a little while, but we'll get to your calls as soon as we can. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Jeremy, before we leave this idea about the Clockwork Orange and the possibility of it being a AI or mechanical robotic sort of intelligence, what are you going for in evidence in that regard? I'll ask the question in this context. The first time that I heard this that sort of theory advanced, it was in connection with Skinwalker Ranch, and there had been a mutilation of a calf in broad daylight on a Sunday morning. The rancher and his wife were out on the pasture when it happened, and within a 40-minute period or so, this calf was completely stripped of its flesh. And when the scientific team sent the remains out for analysis, they found that it had been carved up. I mean, they figured it, determined that different instruments had been used, metallic instruments, one very sharp, like a scalpel, and one sort of heavy, like a cleaver, almost as if it had been processed in a meatpacking plant. Is that sort of what you mean when you're talking about a mechanical or robotic sort of a operative here?
Yeah, in a way, the phenomenon is not sociable. There's a sense of humor to it. It seems like there's a trickster element, but it seems cold. It seems like, and I'm looking for patterns in this. And this is a new developing theory. This is an idea that I just put forward for my new presentation. But it's something I'm seriously looking into. Looking at the patterns, I mean, some of my friends, like there's a guy named Jules Urbach who owns a company called Otoy, and they do some incredible AI work. And maybe I'm being influenced, by talking with him about the UFO phenomenon. You actually had him on your show.
Yes.
But essentially, it's looking at these patterns and looking at these displays and looking at the control system and essentially looking at the possibility of an educational process. And if you think about it, if you're going to send an intelligence from far away or from somewhere close, if you're going to send it, it's more likely that there's some sort of program to teach humanity about how to evolve in certain ways. And this is, in fact, what it's tried to show us in different ways. It has intervened, and that intervention is what's so important. It's not like your friend Joe coming over to your house. This is some sort of intelligence that is trying to manipulate the way we see reality.
Well, a lot of people have theorized, humans who are involved in the American space program, it said it makes a lot more sense if we're going to send something out to cover vast distances to send robotic probes rather than living people. You could send sort of self-replicating machines that can pick up materials along the way if they have to travel for, say, thousands of years. that would make a lot of sense. So I suppose a machine-type intelligence that gets here from somewhere else would make sense in that level.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the work of John Keel, which everybody should kind of familiarize yourself with what has happened in this field before, the interactions remain so bizarre. They're not normal interactions. If it truly is extraterrestrials from other planets coming here, oh, come on, how many daisies can you pick to know the genome of the daisy or whatever? I mean, this is a very fascinating thing. There's too much activity. That's the thing I really want to kind of make sure people understand tonight. Ask the person next to you. Ask the people around you. You will be hard-pressed to find a group of 10 people where one of those people hasn't had a profound life-changing experience because of the phenomenon, UFOs or beyond.
Let's talk about this case you're working on. And I know there are limits on what you can say because you don't want to sort of, you don't want to tip somebody off that you're onto it. You don't want to muddy the waters, but you do need help. So give us the broad strokes of this thing.
Okay. Well, let me just first back up 1 second and just say, look, I'm a filmmaker. I'm not a scientist. You know, my qualifications are just only what I've done before. So I'm trying to find out certain cases that I think have high value. And look, another thing, like as you said, I'm here at the Pioneer Time Hotel by Pappy and Harrods, who, by the way, one of the Beatles just played here, Sir Paul, which is pretty cool. And what inspires me about this topic is I was just talking with the guard who's outside here. He's a young kid, and he said he got in, he was listening to Coast to Coast on the way up here, didn't know I'd be broadcasting out of here. His grandfather got him into this show. We have multiple generations of people that are asking this question. So with my film work, I learned from a guy named Niles Harrison. He's kind of my sensei or my guru with filmmaking. I go to him when I can't make the camera turn on. His father, Randall Harrison, in Kentucky, he's a huge fan of the show, and he watched some of my films and said, keep seeking the truth. So that's what I'm trying to do with my films. Now, this investigation you're speaking about, it's not one of the films I have out. It's not a case I've ever talked about, but I am going to appeal for help from the audience because it's a profoundly important case, but it has a massive cone of silence and secrecy put over it because this case is a developing story, but it's a military UFO and USO event that I've been digging into.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. So essentially, there's a term, anomalous aerial vehicles. It's something that I didn't really wasn't familiar with. People know Hillary Clinton said UAPs. So anomalous aerial vehicles, this idea that well, here's what happened. So basically, off the coast of California in 2004, there was an event. And there was an event where there was a deployment, and there were military pilots who engaged an object, or a series of objects, actually, over a series of days. As you said, I don't want to get into the specifics right now because I don't want this to get out of control. I want to make sure to try to find direct witnesses and try to find exactly the facts. So I can tell you a few specifics about it, but again, the broad strokes.
You want to tell enough for the people who had witnessed it to recognize it and then
Correct.
Reach out if they're willing to talk to you. So there were hundreds of people who saw this, right?
Well, visually saw it is different. There was one pilot in particular, and I have talked with him, but he has given me no authorization to talk about that, but there was an individual who was within 100 feet of this thing and engaged it. It actually actively jammed his weapon systems and radar systems. And briefly, for a moment, there was footage. There was footage that was out in the public domain, but that got shut down. That got shut down real quick. But I want to give people enough, yes, so that if they were part of that deployment, so again, just 2004, off the coast of California. You're on deployment, and your deployment is held back. And there's a reason for that, and there's a lot of buzz about that. In fact, a lot of people on the ships knew about it. There's stories from people who said that everybody was interested in this and kind of made a joke about it the next day. So if you were on those, if you're part of that deployment, you'll know what I'm saying, and reach out to me. But this object, if you know more about it, it was oblong, it seemed like white porcelain, and it was coming in at really, really aggressive trajectories and appeared to be docking with a black, dark USO about the size of a 747 under the water, which was creating a huge churning circle. Now remember, this is current. This is a current case. This is 2004. That's pretty current.
So this thing comes in at a trajectory that would set off alarm bells.
Oh,
figure out what that means. And then it goes down to the water level and looks like it's docking with something that's under the water. And all these military units, pilots, et cetera, it's setting off alarm bells and sensors, and they try to engage it, and it doesn't go well.
They had the Spy-1 radar fixed on this thing, as well as other agencies you can imagine, like NORAD, that kind of thing, tracking objects coming in and out, because this thing would come from 80,000 feet to 50 feet above the water in a matter of seconds.
All right. If someone is listening, naval personnel, we're obviously talking about, if you're listening, this rings a bell, you know something about it, and you're willing to share information, you can reach out to me, you can reach out to Jeremy, you can call anonymously or email, and we would like to hear from you. I'd like to know more about this. Let's talk about Patient 17 for a minute. That was your film. You came on here a year or so ago and talked to us about it. You had participated with Dr. Roger Lear, the late Dr. Lear, in what proved to be his final surgery to remove a suspected alien implant. What's happening?
All right. So essentially, in my presentation, UFOs is a Clockwork Orange, I went over a bunch of my films. I have a number of films, but this feature-length film in particular, I did a lot of kind of talking about the isotopic analysis of this object that came out of Patient 17. I have exciting news tonight. All my films are available on Vimeo, but, you know, who watches Vimeo? I mean, I'm guilty, I've rented like one video on Vimeo. Well, I'm excited to say tonight, I met a guy, he's a really cool guy named Jim Martin, and he's with The Orchard, which is a fantastic distribution company, and fantastic because they don't want to change a frame of my footage. They want me to tell the story like I told it. And that is a rare breed of distributor in the field of films here. So I'm working with The Orchard now. I've done an agreement, and Patient 17 will be available in your homes through your TV set. This is going to be huge eyes on this case, which is so important because this case has turned out to be a fascinating case, a case that I did not think was going to be fascinating. I was almost mocking it when I went into it. I didn't believe it. I have to be honest with you. I didn't believe it's possible that we would find anomalous results for this alleged alien implant in a guy who has become my friend that I call Patient 17 in the movie. But in fact, we did. I showed these results. I talked with to Jacques today about these results because he was going off about everything that he was working on. And sure enough, this is an anomalous result that I have.
So you've had, that's exactly what you said Jacques Vallée was looking for.
Right.
So you had tests done. The tests proved to be pretty interesting. Did Jacques ask you, hey, give me a chunk of that stuff?
We haven't gone that far, and I have a number of laboratories that I want to send it to, but I have to get the piece back. That's the problem. You'll see by watching the movie, I come at this like, let's get to the bottom of this. I told Dr. Lear, you know, before he passed, he was asking me to make a film on him, and I told him, if I make this film, I'm going to tell the truth, and if you're doing anything, if this is not true, I'm going to broadcast that. Are you sure you want that? And he said, yes, I'm sure. I think there's something to this. I've been studying this for decades. So sure enough, he cuts out what ends up being the last alleged implant that he'll ever do because he passed away. And I ended up having to be, you know, the researcher on that, the scientist on that. So I went ahead and I got this, this little object of Patient 17 analyzed both elementally and isotopically. There were 36 different elements in this small, tiny object, but most importantly, there was zinc, and the zinc, 64, was outside, far outside the terrestrial norm, meaning this was made somewhere, and not only was this made somewhere, but most likely it was made somewhere not anywhere near the Milky Way galaxy. So that's the implication if these results are accurate. I looked at cross-contamination. Everything you can imagine. I talked with the head meteorite specialist at UCLA. I talked with a nanotoxicologist. I tried to hit this from every angle. But here's the deal. It's one test. That's all I've done. They are definitively anomalous results. But the question is, will that be replicated in future tests? And I need to do more blind future tests on this, but I got to get the piece back to do that.
Well, that's pretty exciting. I mean, it's exciting, too, that the deal you have with The Orchard means a lot of people will see your film, and this is the first of several projects.
Absolutely. And look, eyeballs on this film is important. It's a topic that is so interesting and fascinating. I mean, you don't have a heartbeat if you're not interested in this. So this movie is going to be seen, and look, I film, I direct, I conduct all the interviews, I do the audio, the editing, the sound. I'm a one-man show. People are always asking for more footage from me. It takes time to make good work, and Patient 17 is good work. And I am excited for the public to engage it, for it to be scrutinized, for people to decide what they believe, and most importantly, for the issue to be moved forward, whether this piece is anomalous or not. And I hope to find out definitively, but right now, we got something anomalous.
Let's take a couple of calls east of the Rockies. Kurt in Chicago. Hi, Kurt. You're on with Jeremy Corbell.
George, Jeremy, pleasure to meet you guys. Yeah, I was on my way up to North Dakota. I was driving by Fort McCoy, and I saw three objects there, each larger than an aircraft carrier, illuminated by different lights. And Fort McCoy was on fire, buddy. Everybody was shining lights up there, and all hell was breaking loose. I pulled over. I lost my radio, my CB. The guys I was talking to on the radio, I couldn't talk to anymore. And what caught my attention is when you said artificial intelligence. There was nothing artificial about this. This was like an actual attack of Fort McCoy when I went by there.
Yeah, thanks for the story. And, you know, don't misunderstand the word artificial. That doesn't mean unreal. These events are unreal. And in fact, when people engage these craft, oftentimes they talk about the skin of the craft being more like a creature than being like hard metal. So the whole spectrum of this phenomenon, when we say an artificial intelligence, and we're talking or theorizing about the idea of the clockwork orange, it's more the idea that what you're shown is not really what it appears. And some of the evidence and some of the generational evidence. So for example, if you have a girl and she tells me about her UFO experience, and she had never asked her mother or her grandmother if they've ever seen anything anomalous. Once they ask that question, it's unbelievable. It tends to be a generational and familial thing. And I can't account for that, but there is some sort of organization to this information.
So, Kurt, did you report this to anybody? Did you call the police, the military, anything like that?
No. You know, I've seen these things before around the country and around my house, you know, the same experience I was around them, you know, is like a demonic experience. You know, when I've met people who are possessed, same type of experience. You know, when I stopped the truck and opened my windows, all I could smell was burnt flesh and electric ozone. There was definitely something intelligent going on there.
Wow.
And, you know, from my experience, it just comes across as demonic entity. Nothing else can explain, you know, coming from, you know, their appearance, the way they leave the area, the way they come into an area. You know, it all explains to me being demonic.
You know, you don't know. I mean, demonic, one man's demon is another man's alien, is somebody else's poltergeist. I mean, you're describing a lot of physical damage, though, and evidence. Was it reported on the news? Did somebody come and investigate?
You know, I've never heard anything from it, and I'm not surprised. You know, same time when there was reports of UFOs in my community, there was nothing on the news, but all our neighbors seen it, okay? Some type of craft beaming lights down on the church and different houses in the community, but nothing was said about it.
All right, Kurt, thanks for calling. Appreciate you sharing that story with us. We're talking with investigative filmmaker Jeremy Corbell. We just heard about his film Patient 17 being picked up by The Orchard, so a lot of folks will get a chance to see it. When we come back, we'll take more of your questions, calls, and comments, and hopefully somebody who heard that story about that unusual incident off the coast of California who has personal information will be able to call us and share some additional insight. Fleetwood Mac takes us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. Classic tune from Pink Floyd, Pigs, three different ones. Got a chance to see Roger Waters last year at Desert Trip unloading on the corporate powers that be. Got a feeling he's just getting started. We're talking with filmmaker Jeremy Corbell about his various projects. A lot of folks on the phone lines now with questions and ideas and stories. We'll get right back to them in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. You know, Jeremy, we've talked about this before, about how you get into the paranormal realm, UFO stuff, and the lines kind of blur between different phenomena. The Bigfoot has a UFO connection, or ghosts sound like aliens or demons, or, you know, it almost is this as if the phenomena is telling us they're all connected somehow. The lines really blur. And some of the cases seem preposterous on purpose. I'm thinking about, like, there was a case in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, maybe you've read about it, where these aliens attacked a family and they were shooting them. It was almost like a shooting gallery where they'd hit them and then they'd turn around and go in the other direction. Totally non-reproducible. People have a hard time believing it. Almost seems to be that way on purpose. Does that fit into your narrative about the Clockwork Orange and the mechanical artificial intelligence or not?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things that really began that kind of thought process, there was a case out here in Pioneertown. It's a guy I got to know, really straightforward guy. And after about a year of knowing him, he says, well, since you're into this, I've never told anybody this story, but I want to tell you something that couldn't have happened. I said, what do you mean something that couldn't have happened? And he described this event in 1945. He was at a public pool as a child in Los Angeles. And as he's swimming under the water, he said, I knew I could swim to the pool and back again about halfway with full breath. He said, all of a sudden, it's as if I could breathe forever. Time just stood still. There was no more splashing in the water. It was almost like an absolute pause in the physical reality that we live in. And when he came up, there was a craft, I mean, a mothership with texture and everything. And the strangest thing is, I mean, before he was able to even leave the public pool, he remembers them setting up, you know, a card table, two guys in suits, taking everybody's description. What did you see? And it was just this absolute, I didn't even ask for this story, but this is so common. These totally bizarre, absolute twilight zone twists of what you'd consider normal reality. There's nothing normal about these experiences. I mean, enough people have them, you can consider them normal, but they just absolutely twist your reality from temporally to just your perceptions.
You said that, you know, if you ask the people around you, you'll be amazed how many folks have an experience that they haven't told anyone about. Have you asked that of the people around you? I mean, you live out there in Pioneertown. It's in the desert. It's a great big open sky, very dark at night.
It's a cultural thing. Yes, of course, I ask everybody. I've been asking everybody this question since I was a kid. And from a kid that I asked in India who was selling chai on the side of the road, he had an opinion about this. He had an experience. And then you go all the way to where I am now in Pioneertown, California, and here, it is unbelievable how many, you have an uncle, you have an aunt, you have a grandfather, you have a mother. Those people, if you just ask them, someone has had an experience. It is absolutely, people just don't ask the question, and that's the problem.
First time caller, Michael in Tampa, Florida. How you doing, Michael? You're on with Jeremy Corbell.
How are you guys doing tonight?
All right. What's on your mind?
I'm a paranormal investigator. I deal mostly with hauntings down here. And recently, I've been working with other groups on a couple of cases. And I was talking with a buddy of mine about these cases. And he's done a great deal in UFO research. And the correlations between the sightings that people have had and the hauntings that I am investigating, are the dates are almost right on top of each other. Do you have any belief that there is a correlation between UFO sightings and paranormal activities such as poltergeist?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that. You know, there's new content on my website. I try to always create new content, and recently I've been working on a number of cases, I guess, that seem to indicate that there is a phenomenon that does display itself as UFOs, but additionally, that it can come across as poltergeist. As, you know, I think George said earlier tonight, you know, one person's demon is another person's, alien. And that's the situation. We're trying to classify these things into categories we can understand them. And we all take a cultural perspective to that. If you ask people in the Amazon of Brazil what they think of the lights, it's very different than if you ask a scientist from Silicon Valley. And I think that's the crux of it, is that we're explaining things with words that best fit how we see things. Patient 17 called them alien gangsters. He said they're gangsters. You didn't invite them over. they come and they take you. They do what they want with you. They tag you, and at least he was let free. And so everybody has a different opinion based on culture. So, yes, I do think they're connected. I think there's something to that. I don't know. I think.
Thank you, Mike L. And, you know, a lot of people have reported on this program, Jeremy, it's a very positive experience for them.
Absolutely. Sometimes it is. You know, for my friend that I talked with, that I just talked about, it was a very positive experience. But the things that haunt them later in life is not being able to explain it to their loved ones. That's what haunts them. That's what haunts a fighter pilot who engaged that object I was talking about earlier. Is how do you explain this to your family? You know what you saw, but you know what you saw. But how does that relate to the larger context of when you're telling your kids goodnight and telling them what the world is like? It's a huge mystery, big question.
Well, a lot of people don't tell them at all. They don't certainly don't tell their kids when they're saying goodnight. West of the Rockies, Joy in Santa Cruz. Hi, Joy.
Good morning to you, Jeremy, and to you, George. I love you both. Jeremy, I am one of the people who have seen things coming up out of the Monterey Bay.
That's awesome, Joy. I used to teach jujitsu and live in Santa Cruz for about 10 years, and that is absolutely, like Pioneer Town, a very mysterious place. I don't doubt you saw them. Think about it this way. If you were going to hide on this earth, if you had a craft of unknown origin, the most land that you could do that on is under the water. So a lot of people, USOs, I've actually been nudged in that direction by a military contact of mine saying that there is something to the UFO thing bigger than you think is what he told me. And so I'm very fascinated about the USO subject. And finally, these cases are landing in my lap. So if you have a USO case out there, shoot me an email at Extraordinary Beliefs.
Well, do you want me to tell you what it is?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We were having dinner with a friend of ours, and I was walking along up there up above so I could really see the bay, and this green light started coming up out of the water. And it had kelp all over it, and then the kelp started to drip off. It was kind of a round object, and then it went all the way down to, I don't know, you know where Moss Landing is,
which
is
very
where the power plant is?
I do very well, yeah.
It hovered there for about 20 minutes.
Wow. Wow.
And
let me
just
ask you this.
We had one of those spy glasses, you know, those brass telescopes where you can look at something really closely.
Did you have an emotional impression from this sighting, or was it just purely visual?
I had a bit of an emotional feeling because it freaked me out. I don't know. I mean,
normal reaction.
Yeah, well, it was a reaction, sure. But we were able to look at it through the spyglass. What we saw, instead of just green lights around it, we saw amber, green windows all the way around this thing.
I'm so jealous, Joy.
you don't want to be jealous. This was kind of gave me a foreboding feeling.
That's commonly said. That's actually what Bob Lazar said when people asked him, what did it feel like when you walked into the UFO, that he was back engineering? And he said, honestly, it felt ominous.
Yeah.
Joy, thank you for the call. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Wild card, John in Rhode Island. Hi, John. Good morning.
Hey, George. Boy, I finally got through. Well, I had an after-death experience.
After death experience,
somebody who came back to see me. This happened about a year ago, and I told many people about it, but, you know, they give me that look, you know. My bedroom is upstairs, but I was downstairs in front of my computer, checking my email and so on, when something caught my eye to the left. I looked, and there, standing in solid form, was Pauline Lamothe. She came from Bristol, Rhode Island. I knew her whole family. I had been to her house. I met her husband, her three grown children and all. But she was there in solid form. This was not a shadow. But she had died like 8 or 9 years ago.
Did she say something?
We both worked at the Raytheon Company in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Then they worked on subs, I guess. We used to make parts for the submarines. So there she was in this bright orange dress. And I was flabbergasted because when I told people about this, they give me that look, you know. I'm a veteran of World War II. I'm 95 years old. So I didn't know what to do. She didn't say anything, but she had a smile on her face like she was glad to see me, you know? And I didn't say anything. She didn't say anything, but after all, she had been dead for quite a while, 8 or 9 years.
So what do you think that was about? Was there unfinished business between the two of you or something?
She was in solid form. I knew her. We both worked at Raytheon Company, so I knew her for, you know, close to 40 years.
Wow.
And so I didn't say anything. She didn't say anything. And I said, well, gee, the only thing I can do is I'll get up and I'll touch her. But everything was normal. It wasn't a shadow form. This was solid form.
So you walked up and touched her?
No, not yet. No. That's what I had decided I wanted to do, to make sure I wasn't dreaming, you know. So Pauline Lamont, there she was, looking right down at me with a smile on her face, her hair, everything was normal. And the dress, to this day, I can still visualize the fabric of her dress, you know.
So, John, you said you were thinking about walking up and touching her. Did you try to do that, and how long did this last?
I decided I'd do that. And the only way I can be sure that she was there, but she was there in solid form, not shadow. So, okay, I finally decided I'd get up and I'll touch her. So I gets up, and my finger got just about an inch from her, and then she faded away. But she was so real. I can't say it wasn't shadow form, and I wasn't dreaming. So I don't know what else I could say. I tell people about it, and you know, they give me that look. You know,
yeah.
Well, he's an old veteran. He's seeing things. You know.
Hey, well, John, thank you for sharing that with us. I'm going to get Jeremy's take on that. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it, Jeremy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful story, and that's incredible, and I don't doubt it one bit. I mean, you know, what I've really learned, you know, through all of this is that if you ask the questions, people will tell you. There's really rarely a human that on this earth who hasn't had some sort of precognitive or paranormal experience or UFO experience. I mean, they all are parts of our life deeply, whether we acknowledge and recognize it verbally or not.
It also makes you wonder about hot spots. Are there hot spots, or are there just spots that have been studied more, or that people have paid attention more, or is this stuff everywhere, or is there such a place as a portal or a place, some location for whatever reason that more of it happens?
I mean, as you said, you know, places where the world is thin, you know, there appear to be hot spots. I mean, that is something that I talked to Jacques with today as well, that there do seem to be places and times where the activity seems to be amplified, and those are great opportunities to get boots on the ground and begin to study it to whatever degree we can learn. Just push the needle forward. We want to learn more if we can't learn everything.
Go to a quick call from Richie in West Virginia. Hi, Richie. You're on with Jeremy Corbell.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure.
Jeremy, congratulations on the film. I look forward to taking a look at it myself. I just got a quick question, and I was just wondering if you think, since I heard you say that you kind of described the feeling of the vehicle being like skin-like texture, if it could be like a symbiote device with some type of intelligence that could be controlled by someone by being used as a symbiote. and be able to make all the movements like the UFOs all do?
I mean, this is a theory that people have put forward. And again, some cases people describe almost like, you know, the craft itself or the skin itself has some sort of living, you know, soul to it. You know, again, that's the Clockwork Orange thing, you know. Is it that, or is it some sort of, you know, computer holographic display, which, you know, is another interesting thing about the layers of deception that, you know, we can at this time, you know, fake some sort of UFO contact. Our government has the ability to do that. So we're dealing with so many unknowns here. I can't attest to if this craft or if the craft have that, you know, what you're talking about. But I think it's within possibility. Absolutely.
Richie, thanks for the call. Jeremy, I know because of how you started down this road, the first project in this arena was John Lear. I know that when you go out in public, people ask you how he's doing, so I'll ask the question. He's my neighbor, but I don't get to see him or talk to him very often. How is he doing?
It depends on the day with John. You know, he's had a rough number of years, and I guess it just depends on the day with John. And last time I talked to him, he was doing better, but, you know, he's had a rough patch, and he won't be here forever, but we're lucky to have him right now. And he's the one that originally, I'd say, radicalized my curiosity before it was weaponized. I mean, I was just fascinated by the guy, and I still am. He's an incredible individual, and I wish him good health, and hopefully he'll be feeling better.
So if people want to check out your films and what you're up to, where do they go?
They go to extraordinarybeliefs.com. It's like the Twilight Zone, except everything I'm reporting on is real. It's absolutely incredible. The extraordinary beliefs of credible individuals. I no longer have the luxury of disbelief. And my films, hopefully if you watch it, you will be curious. You will be actuated into investigating and looking into this. We need help. We need help in this field. We need rational, scientific-minded people that have integrity. So come on out of the woodwork, tell me your stories, and help me find out more about this phenomenon.
All right, Jeremy Corbell, thanks. Talk to you soon. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you, George.
All right, we'll be shifting gears now. We're going to talk about the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, most influential album in the history of popular music, with Bruce Spicer, who's written several books about the Beatles and their influence and taking us into the break. Robbie Williams, a song called Let Love Be Your Energy. I've always said that I thought this is the most Beatle-like song, and Robbie's huge repertoire. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM.